broad on both bows at the distance of some 2 or 3 miles, and forming a great semicircle embracing one half of the level horizon, a continuous chain of whale jets were upplaying and sparkling in the noonday air. Unlike the straight, perpendicular twin jets of the right whale, which, dividing atop, fall over in 2 branches like the cleft, drooping boughs of a willow, the single forward slanting spout of the sperm whale presents a thick, curled bush of white mist, continually rising and falling away to leeward. Seen from the Pequod's deck, then, as she would rise on a high hill of the sea, this host of vapory spouts individually curling up into the air and beheld through a blending atmosphere of bluish haze showed like the 1,000 cheerful chimneys of some dense metropolis descried of a balmy autumnal morning by some horseman on a height. As marching armies approaching an unfriendly defile in the mountains accelerate their march, all eagerness to place that perilous passage in their rear and once more expand in comparative security upon the plain, even so did this vast fleet of whales now seem hurrying forward through the straits, gradually contracting the wings of their semicircle and swimming on in one solid but still crescentic center. Crowding all sail, the Pequod pressed after them, the harpooners handling their weapons and loudly cheering from the heads of their yet suspended boats. If the wind only held, little doubt had they that, chased through these straits of Sunda, the vast host would only deploy into the Oriental seas to witness the capture of not a few of their number. And who could tell whether in that congregated caravan Moby Dick himself might not temporarily be swimming like the worshipped white elephant in the coronation procession of the Siamese? So with stunsail piled on stunsail we sailed along, driving these leviathans before us, when of a sudden the voice of Tashtego was heard loudly directing attention to something in our wake. Corresponding to the crescent in our van, we beheld another in our rear. It seemed formed of detached white vapors, rising and falling something like the spouts of the whales, only they did not so completely come and go, for they constantly hovered without finally disappearing. Leveling his glass at this sight, Ahab quickly revolved in his pivot hole, crying, "All off there, and rig whips and buckets to wet the sails! Melee, sir, and after us!" As if too long lurking behind the headlands till the Pequod should fairly have entered the straits, these rascally Asiatics were now in hot pursuit to make up for their over-cautious delay. But when the swift Pequod with a fresh leading wind was herself in hot chase, how very kind of these tawny philanthropists to assist in speeding her on to her own chosen pursuit, mere riding whips and rowels to her that they were. As with glass under arm, Ahab to and fro paced the deck, in his forward turn beholding the monsters he chased, and in the after one the bloodthirsty pirates chasing him, some such fancy as the above seemed his. And when he glanced upon the green walls of the watery defile in which the ship was then sailing, and bethought him that through that gate lay the route to his vengeance, and beheld how that through that same gate he was now both chasing and being chased to his deadly end, and not only that, but a herd of remorseless wild pirates and inhuman atheistical devils were infernally cheering him on with their curses, when all these conceits had passed through his brain, Ahab's brow was left gaunt and ribbed, like the black sand beach after some stormy tide has been gnawing it without being able to drag the firm thing from its place. But thoughts like these troubled very few of the reckless crew, and when, after steadily dropping and dropping the pirates astern, the Pequod at last shot by the vivid green cockatoo point on the Sumatra side, emerging at last upon the broad waters beyond, then the harpooner seemed more to grieve that the swift whales had been gaining upon the ship than to rejoice that the ship had so victoriously gained upon the Malays. But still driving on in the wake of the whales, at length they seemed abating their speed. Gradually the ship neared them, and the wind now dying away, word was passed to spring to the boats. But no sooner did the herd, by some presumed wonderful instinct of the sperm whale, become notified of the 3 keels that were after them, though as yet a mile in their rear, that they rallied again, and forming in close ranks and battalions, so that their spouts all looked like flashing lines of stacked bayonets, moved on with redoubled velocity. Stripped to our shirts and drawers, we sprang to the white ash, and after several hours' pulling were almost disposed to renounce the chase, When a general pausing commotion among the whales gave animating token that they were now at last under the influence of that strange perplexity of inert irresolution which, when the fishermen perceive it in the whale, they say he is gallied. To galley or gallow is to frighten excessively, to confound with fright. It is an old Saxon word. It occurs once in Shakespeare. The wrathful skies gallow the very wanderers of the dark and make them keep their caves. Lear, Act 3, Scene 2. To common land usages, the word is now completely obsolete. When the polite landsman first hears it from the gaunt Nantucketer, he is apt to set it down as one of the whaleman's self-derived savageries. Much the same is it with many other sinewy Saxonisms of this sort, which emigrated to the New England rocks with the noble brawn of the old English emigrants in the time of the Commonwealth. Thus, some of the best and furthest descended English words, the etymological Howards and Percys, are now democratized, nay, plebeianized, so to speak, in the New World. The compact, martial columns in which they had been hitherto rapidly and steadily swimming were now broken up in one measureless rout, and like King Porus' elephants in the Indian battle with Alexander, they seemed going mad with consternation. In all directions, expanding in vast irregular circles, and aimlessly swimming hither and hither by their short, thick spoutings, they plainly betrayed their distraction of panic. This was still more strangely evinced by those of their number who, completely paralyzed, as it were, helplessly floated like waterlogged, dismantled ships on the sea. Had these leviathans been but a flock of simple sheep pursued over the pasture by three fierce wolves, they could not possibly have evinced such excessive dismay. But this occasional timidity is characteristic of almost all herding creatures. Though banding together in tens of thousands, the lion-maned buffaloes of the West have fled before a solitary horseman. Witness, too, all human beings how, when herded together in the sheepfold of a theater's pit, they will, at the slightest alarm of fire, rush helter-skelter for the outlets, crowding, trampling, jamming, and remorselessly dashing each other to death. Best, therefore, withhold any amazement at the strangely gallied whales before us, for there is no folly of the beasts of the earth which is not infinitely outdone by the madness of men. Though many of the whales, as has been said, were in violent motion, yet it is to be observed that, as a whole, the herd neither advanced nor retreated, but collectively remained in one place. As is customary in those cases, the boats at once separated, each making for some one lone whale on the outskirts of the shoal. In about 3 minutes' time, Queequeg's harpoon was flung. The stricken fish darted blinding spray in our faces, and then, running away with us like light, steered straight for the heart of the herd. Though such a movement on the part of the whales struck under such circumstances is in no wise unprecedented, and indeed is almost always more or less anticipated, yet does it present one of the more perilous vicissitudes of the fishery. For as the swift monster drags you deeper and deeper into the frantic shoal, you bid adieu to circumspect life and only exist in a delirious throb. As, blind and deaf, the whale plunged forward as if by sheer power of speed to rid himself of the iron leech that had fastened to him, as we thus tore a white gash in the sea, on all sides menaced as we flew by the crazed creatures to and fro rushing about us, our beset boat was like a ship mobbed by ice isles in a tempest, and striving to steer through their complicated channels and straits, knowing not at what moment it may be locked in and crushed. But not a bit daunted, Queequeg steered us manfully, now sheering off from this monster directly across our route in advance, now edging away from that whose colossal flukes were suspended overhead, while all the time Starbuck stood up in the bows, lance in hand, pricking out of our way whatever whales he could reach by short darts, for there was no time to make long ones. Nor were the oarsmen quite idle, though their wonted duty was now altogether dispensed with. They chiefly attended to the shouting part of the business. "Out of the way, Commodore!" cried one to a great dromedary that of a sudden rose bodily to the surface and for an instant threatened to swamp us. "Hard down with your tail there!" cried a second to another, which close to our gunwale seemed calmly cooling himself with his own fan-like extremity.
This ends Disc 12.